Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 2, Chapter 10, Text Number 26. Nera vidyata sishno vai prajanandam ritartinaha upashta ashit kamanam priyam tad ubhayasrayam. Nirabhidyata came out. Sishnaha, the genitals. Vai, certainly. Praja ananda, sex pleasure. Amrita artinaha, aspiring to taste the nectar. Upashtaha, the male or female organ. Ashit, came into existence. Kamanam, of the lustful. Priyam, very dear. Tat, that. Ubhaya ashrayam, shelter for both. Thereupon, for sexual pleasure, begetting offspring, and tasting heavenly nectar, the Lord developed the genitals. And thus, there is the genital organ and its controlling deity, the Prajapati. The object of sexual pleasure and the controlling deity are under the control of the genitals of the Lord. Purport. The heavenly pleasure for the conditioned soul is sexual pleasure, and this pleasure is tasted by the genitals. The woman is the object of sexual pleasure, and both the sense perception of sexual pleasure and the woman are controlled by the Prajapati, who is under the control of the Lord's genitals. The impersonalist must know from this verse that the Lord is not impersonal, for he has his genitals on which all the pleasurable objects of sex depend. No one would have taken the trouble to maintain children if there were no taste of heavenly nectar by means of sexual intercourse. This material world is created to give the conditioned souls a chance for rejuvenation, for going back home, back to Godhead. And therefore, generation of the living being is necessary for upkeep of the purpose of creation. Sexual pleasure is an impetus for such action. And as such, one can even serve the Lord in the act of sexual pleasure. The service is counted when the children born of such sexual pleasure are properly trained in Krishna consciousness. In God consciousness. The whole idea of material creation is to revive the dormant God consciousness of the living entity. In forms of life, other than the human form, sexual pleasure is prominent without any motive of service for the mission of the Lord. But in the human form of life, the conditioned soul can render service to the Lord by creating progeny suitable for the attainment of salvation. One can beget hundreds of children in God consciousness. Otherwise, begetting children is on the level of the swine. Rather, the swine is more expert than the human being, because the swine can beget a dozen piglets at a time, whereas the human being can give birth to only one at a time. So one should always remember that the genitals, sexual pleasure, the woman, and the offspring are all related in the service of the Lord. And one who forgets this relationship in the service of the Supreme Lord becomes subjected to the threefold miseries of material existence by the laws of nature. Perception of sexual pleasure is there even in the body of the dog. But there is no sense of God consciousness. The human form of life is distinct from that of the dog by the perception of God consciousness. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam. So, in this section of the Bhagavatam, we get a description of how the various senses of the living entity are under the control of a variety of personalities, right? And, of course, this is connected to a statement earlier on. Sthiti vaikunta vijayaha poshanam taddunag anugraha manvantarani sadharma uttaya karma vasanaha. Right at the beginning of the chapter. The right situation for the living entities is to obey the laws of the Lord. Vaikuntha Vijayaha, the Lord of Vaikuntha, because he's in charge of everything. And there is a purpose for the material creation. Everything has a purpose. In that, it can be utilized for liberation. Anything that's not conducive to making spiritual progress or spiritual advancement should be rejected. Right? Beginning of surrender. The beginning of surrendering is to accept that which is favorable and reject that which is unfavorable. And with the, you know, with the proper vision, one can see almost pretty much everything in the creation as a means for, an inspiration or a impetus for self-realization. If it's viewed with the right perspective, if it's seen from the perspective of its relationship with Krishna. Right? One who takes everything or sees everything, it's a different way of thinking. Krishna consciousness is basically an opportunity or a practice for maintaining a meditation. That meditation is looking at everything in relationship with Krishna. Most often we're looking at things and we're thinking, what's in it for me? How can I take advantage? How can I get some benefit? How can I get some sense fulfillment or sense satisfaction from whatever it is we see around us? And especially in this particular verse, which is particularly, it deals on a topic or a subject matter which is particularly bewildering for the living entity, is the impetus for enjoying, you know, Prabhupada says pretty much the substance of material existence is this desire to enjoy sexual pleasure. How is it described here? Praja ananda. Right? Procreation. Praja ananda. What's ananda mean? Pleasure. Praja ananda. As Prabhupada points out here very nicely, if there wasn't any pleasure in sex, then we probably wouldn't have children. Right? Because what does having children entail? Yeah, responsibility, big responsibility. And along with responsibility, what comes next? Yes. And what does that manifest in? Austerity and sacrifice. What does that manifest in? What's that? Yes, you have to work hard. Who likes working hard? See, none of the brahmacharis put their hand up. And the ladies are all too humble. Huh? We have to work hard. Who likes working hard? We will work. Right? It's our nature to act, especially according to our propensity here in the previous purport. Svai svai karmaji karmani abhirataha. We perfect our lives by acting or working on behalf of Krishna. Right? Now, Ordinarily, we wouldn't be we wouldn't act, or we refrain from acting, or we try to renounce action artificially. But the perfection of all action is for us to be engaged in devotional service. And whilst it is recommended that one abstain from engaging in this praja ananda, because it is a something of a botheration, right? It's a lot of hard work. So, you know, if we can avoid that effort, then and live a life of renunciation, detachment from this praja ananda, then and can utilize our propensity to work, that impetus to act, only in devotional service, then that's highly recommended. Right? That's encouraged. Because it means then that one doesn't need to be, or one can avoid the distractions that come with the responsibility of looking after wife and family. That's highly recommended. And you know, it's why there's respect given to the brahmachari ashram, is why there's respect given to the vanaprastha ashram, and especially respect given to the sannyas ashram, because this is the strongest impetus for material affection and material attraction, and along with that comes material attachment. Right? There's the attachment to the sense pleasure itself. There's the attachment to the wife, and conversely, the attachment for the wife to the husband. There's attachment to the children. These are all natural objects of affection, right? And along with that comes then the, you know, the bodily concept of existence. So if it can be avoided, if a person is very fortunate and is able to is detached enough, and of course this requires training. Why Prahlad Maharaj says, you know, what is it? Tapasa brahmacharyena. In the beginning of life, we should be trained in tapasya. And that tapasya, one of those tapasyas especially, is brahmacharya. But the problem is, and you know, everybody has got genitals, right? Unfortunately, this is what we're lumbered with. It's one of the prime focuses of material existence, is to enjoy sex pleasure. So it then becomes a problem, right? Because and we shouldn't be surprised. You know, sometimes it can be a little bewildering for devotees, because, you know, we chant Hare Krishna, we do all of our devotional service, we study the Bhagavatam, we follow the instructions of the spiritual master, we've taken initiation, right? And sometimes the devotees think, oh, initiation is like a magic wand, and then we get initiated, and then, blah, blah, all of a sudden we're pure devotees, right? Or that, you know, all of my sinful reactions have now been taken away by the spiritual master. Right? That's what it says in the Shastra. But then, and we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're enthusiastically engaged in devotional service, and we're inspired and enthusiastic, but then all of a sudden, or maybe not even all of a sudden, but slowly but surely, the desire for this Praja Ananda pops up again. Or desire for, you know, it could be anything. But specifically, this is, you know, this is what's sometimes referred to as the fourth regulative principle, right? And the one that devotees, or just, you know, devotees in general, not everybody, but it is a principle that most devotees have difficulty following. And they wonder why. I'm a devotee, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I've taken initiation, I'm doing it, I'm doing all the right things. But still, I have this, you know, there are attachments. So why is that? And why shouldn't we be surprised that it exists? And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that whilst we follow the process of devotional service and we're purified by that activity and we focus everything on Krishna, at the same time we have residual, or we have remnants of our material desires, and they create obstacles for us. Even in the process, I was discussing this with Kirti last night, you know, as we progress through life, then our situations and circumstances change. And so while we may be enthusiastic and determined and able to follow the process of devotional service enthusiastically at one stage, at another stage, obstacles and material attachments may arise. In fact, they will arise. They do arise. And they arise because as a result of some of that residual pride, actually, that we have in our sense of who we are. In other words, our consciousness is not thoroughly purified, and so as a result, those remnants of attachment are manifest by Krishna's arrangement in order to test us. And they present then opportunities for us to remove those attachments. You know, we think, oh no, not that, not whatever it is, whatever particular material attachment you have or we have or I have. We think, it's coming up again, what is it? Why me? I'm trying to be a pure devotee. Huh? Or I'm a pure devotee. Why am I struggling with these issues? Does anybody have that problem? No? It can be discouraging for a devotee. It can be discouraging or depressing to have to face oneself all the time. But it's actually an opportunity to rectify our pride and to become humble and realize, and you know, really the quality of a devotee is to appreciate that actually I'm not really a devotee. And, you know, we see that manifest in the character of the very exemplary and exalted Vaishnavas. Like Srila Prabhupada and others. Oftentimes when Srila Prabhupada was praised as being you're a pure devotee, Prabhupada, Prabhupada would respond with a very humble demeanor, very, you know, more or less saying, you know, I wish I was a pure devotee. I wish I was that advanced. So we have an opportunity we have an opportunity to purify all of our material attachments by taking, by maturely, and we can do this with the help and assistance of our spiritual masters, by our guru, by our siksha and diksha guru, by, you know, humbly and intelligently understanding our propensities. And so therefore, for, and you know, this is not unusual, and it, for most, it's normal that we have this, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. As it is mentioned here, we all of us get genitals. Right? Male or female. And they need to be engaged appropriately if that urge is strong enough to disturb us. And so we intelligently apply that urge or that impetus in Krishna's service. Vacho vegam, udrapasta vegam, jiva vegam. Vacho vegam, what is it? Manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udrapasta vegam. So these are the urges, six urges: the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, right? The urge to eat. You know, we can't repress, if they're very strong, and these are all very strong, they can't be repressed, they have to be engaged. Right? Just like, you know, we used to see the brahmachari, or any the brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, you know, they turn up for breakfast with a really small plate. Right? But then, you know, the plate gets piled up. And then, you can't, it's the urge to eat. That's the tongue and the belly, right? Two pushes, pushing us. So similarly also, udarapasta, the word upasta here, the male or female organ. Udarapasta vegam, the push, the urge. So it's natural, it's normal, to be expected. If it can be tolerated, that's the best. But if it becomes a disturbance, then we have to learn how to deal with it. Otherwise, it'll disrupt our devotional life. So therefore, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had his sannyasi disciples, but he also had his grihastha disciples. And he encouraged both. And Srila Prabhupada also was, you know, he was very proud of his grihastha disciples who could do more preaching than his sannyasi godbrothers. So it's not a, you know, it's not unusual, and it's a means of actually liberation, whereby one who is attracted to this Praja Ananda can utilize it in its proper form for purification by engaging it in devotional service. And that's the key. All of these things, the sense organs are all, and this chapter illustrates this point, they're all controlled ultimately by some demigod. Right? Each of our senses is, we think it's ours. Right? I'm doing this. Kartaham iti manyate. We think it's mine and I'm doing it. Right? This is how we think. But actually, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmasa savasaha. This is actually, the material energy is working, and the material energy is working under the control of all of the administrative demigods. Right? Which is what's being described here. But who's controlling the demigods? The demigods are all devotees. That's why they get that job, that responsibility. Elevated souls, very highly elevated devotees who get the opportunity to administrate, to orchestrate, to organize, to facilitate under the direction of the Supreme Personality. And so consequently, the message is that these facilities are not actually ours. You know, it was the reason why we put the tilak on our forehead. We put the tilak on our forehead to remind us that this body is just a temporary vehicle. Right? Just like when we rent a house from the landlord, he's the owner of the house, but he allows us to live in it and utilize it. So similarly also, this body is like a residence, and we're the temporary tenant in the body. And it's only on lease to us. Right? We're born, we don't know how we got here. And then at some point in time, we don't know that either, we'll be out. So it's not ours. It's something that's given to us, and eventually it's something that will be taken away. So therefore we put the tilak on to remind us that this body, it belongs to Krishna, ultimately. And it's orchestrated or organized by or facilitated by the demigods. This demigod in charge of the genitals, this demigod in charge of the sense of touch, this demigod in charge of the sense of sight, this demigod in charge of walking around, so on and so forth. Different personalities facilitate our activities, although we're not able to see it. We're only looking at things from the external perspective. But the Bhagavatam teaches us also to look at everything very critically and understand it from the point of view of what the internal workings are actually are actually going on, even though we can't see it necessarily. You know, this is the materialistic idea. I can't see it, doesn't exist. Right? Although, you know, we could say to them, hang on a second, you can't see a person's mind, so therefore it doesn't exist. But everybody knows, everybody's got a mind. Everybody can, and we can sense the act, we can see the actions or the workings of the mind in a person. But we can't see the mind itself, right? How do we gauge or see the workings of a person's mind? Anybody know? Huh? One way, yeah. But usually one way. Yes, we look at their face, right? If you tell what's going on in a person's mind, then you look at their face, you know. Right? Or then smiling. Huh? We can tell what's going on in his mind. We see the devotees jumping up and down. Hurry, hurry, ball! Roaring away. We can tell. He's in ecstasy. So, we have genitals. They're under the control of the various demigods, ultimately under the control of the Supreme Lord. And they exist in us because he also has these features and characteristics. It's also an urge for God. Right? He also has desires. Right? He's not impersonal, as Prabhupada says here. The impersonalist must know from this verse that the Lord is not impersonal, for he has his genitals on which all the pleasurable objects of sex depend, because he enjoys his genitals, right? Therefore, the impetus is also within us to enjoy ours. That's a bit of a shock for us. Ooh. But it's not easy to understand that the impetus of the Lord is pure and spiritual, without material inebriation. But for us, in the spiritual world it's the highest, but in the material world it's the lowest, and also the most binding. But whereas the topics of the Lord's enjoyment with his internal spiritual energy manifest in the form of Srimati Radharani is the topmost level of spiritual enjoyment. But topics that we're recommended not to dally in unless we're free from this impetus. Right? And we need to intelligently look at ourselves and appreciate how this impetus can be engaged in devotional service for our purification, so that we can be elevated to appreciate the highest in the spiritual world without misidentifying with it as the same as the material enjoyment. This is why it's not a topic that it's taboo in one sense. Is that right? Huh? Because it's very binding. If we look at it from a material perspective, I was driving in the Toyota the other day, listening to the Prabhupada Memorial Festival that they had in Mayapur in 2005, Yogeshwara was talking about his experiences with Srila Prabhupada in Paris. And one of the first things, it's very interesting, one of the first things that Prabhupada said to Yogeshwara, because he'd missed out on Prabhupada's association sometime earlier when he was in London, because he was in Paris, and the devotees said, come, he hadn't actually joined up. And he was a bit reluctant when the devotee said, come to London, Prabhupada's there, you can see, it's a great opportunity to meet a pure devotee. And Yogeshwara was a bit reluctant because she thought, if I go and see the pure devotee, then I'll end up like these fellows with a bald head and I'll be living in the, I'll be a Hare Krishna. But then later on, he eventually took initiation, but before he met Prabhupada. Then Prabhupada came to Paris and he went to the hotel where Prabhupada was staying, and Prabhupada was resting. It was an arrangement made by the Indian consulate, I think, for Prabhupada to have a place to rest before he went to the temple after landing at the airport. Prabhupada called Yogeshwara in, and then he said to him straight away, there wasn't a time whenever I forgot Krishna. Huh? He said, from birth, all I can remember is having served Krishna. So that was the first, exchange with Prabhupada. So then later they went to the, they were doing some, there was some engagement with the United Nations. They'd been to visit somebody at the United Nations, and they gave them a book by Vidyapati and another Chandidas, I think, right? And they brought it back and gave it to Srila Prabhupada. Later on, Prabhupada again called Jogeshwara into the room and he said, "Where did you get this book from?" And he told the story. And then Prabhupada said words to the effect that, you know, this is highly elevated subject matter. You know, because the poems of Vidyapati and Chandidas are about the intimate loving affairs between Radha and Krishna. And Prabhupada was saying, nobody can understand this. Who can understand this? And Yogeshwara then at that point said, you know, you can, Srila Prabhupada. And that's when Prabhupada was, Yogeshwara made a point. He said, this is the first time and I did it on another occasion and I wished I hadn't. And I said to Prabhupada, you know, you can, Prabhupada. You're elevated enough to understand these things. And Prabhupada then became very internal and serious, grave, and he said, you know, if only I could understand these topics. One has to be very advanced to understand the intimate topics between, to discuss the relationship or the intimate affairs, shall we say, between Radha and Krishna. You'll see Prabhupada in his public presentations, even in his private discussions with his disciples, he didn't discuss these things. Not for general discussion. So anyway, later, Yogeshwara was very embarrassed because Srila Prabhupada, you know, was so humble in his appreciation of himself. Although, it's interesting, previously he said, you know, there's never a time when, Prabhupada was obviously qualified. He said to Jagaswara right from the word go, you know, there was never a time when I forgot Krishna. I said, you know, obviously Prabhupada is a very, but when it comes to these very serious matters. So Prabhupada was saying, you know, this book really shouldn't be published and distributed like this because who can understand it? It's so elevated. We shouldn't, you know, think we're so advanced. Basically, and Prabhupada exemplified that with his humility. And you know, then there's the story Prabhupada told Yogeshwara the story of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who wanted to publish, was it the Krishna Karanamrita? And he went to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and asked him, you know, I'd like to publish this book. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, no, it's too elevated. It just goes over the, it's, people, if we're not sufficiently mature in our Krishna consciousness, which means pure, then if we discuss these very elevated pastimes of Krishna, we'll just look at them as mundane activities, material activities like we do, which should be avoided because it's not good for our Krishna consciousness. We need to know first and foremost that we're not the body, right? So that's just, we've got to get to that level first before we go any further. Otherwise, the tendency is to see Radha and Krishna's pastimes in a mundane context. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur went again back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and he said, "I really would like to publish this book." And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, because so elevated subject matter, it should be published. Bhaktivinoda Thakur again said, "No. It's, you know, not going to be beneficial for others." Then third time he went to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, "All right, you can publish it, but only one copy for yourself." Right? Because he's elevated enough to understand the importance and the value of the scripture. This is what Prabhupada said to Yogeshwara. He said, "This poem is the poem of a married woman appealing to her lover." Right? So he said, when people read this, you know, we preach no illicit sex, right? We preach no illicit sex, but then we distribute a book that says, that illustrates a married woman praying to her lover to please take her away from her husband. Right? So people get confused. What's going on here? Huh? And then, so anyway, later on, Prabhupada called Yogeshwar and he was still... No, that's right. Prabhupada was having a massage. And Yogeshwara was there. And then Prabhupada was reading the book. And then he said to Yogeshwara, he said, here she says, if you really love me... I think it was Krishna saying, if you really love me, then wrap your legs around me. And Prabhupada was smiling. He said, what do you think of that? Right? And Yogeshwara was... And he said, I paid my obeisances and more or less walked out backwards, left the room. Because, you know, just a young man in the prime of his youth as a brahmachari, you know, Prabhupada embarrassed him. So, you know, we shouldn't be surprised that we are stricken or, you know, subjected to these influences. But we need to know that we need to know the means by which we can be purified, even by these activities which appear to be highly material. And so, therefore, Prabhupada says here because of the material world is created to give us a chance to go back home, back to Godhead, then we're given a chance to utilize even this sexual impetus in Krishna's service, in devotional service. Right? And Prabhupada says the service is counted. Right? So it's not material activity. And even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, what is it? Kamasmi. What is it? The sex life according to religious principles, that activity I am. Right? He also says another one, Japanam Jagya Jagjo Smi, right? Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of Japa. And in the same verse he says, sex life also, according to religious principles, is me. So it's an elevated activity. From the material perspective, it's a cause of bondage. But from the spiritual perspective, when the Prabhupada says it, the service is counted. Yeah, here, sex pleasure is an impetus for such action. That's, and you know, he Prabhupada makes a point, very important point. If there wasn't sex life, then there wouldn't be the generation and regeneration of living entities in the material world. So it's required for providing the facility for the living entities to get out of material existence. Right? It's the cause of bondage, but it is also the cause of liberation in the sense that it provides us with the facilities we have to, especially in the human form of life, to purify ourselves. Right? And so, as such, one can even serve the Lord in the act of sexual pleasure. The service is counted when the children born of such sexual pleasure are properly trained in God consciousness. Right? So there's the responsibility. Huge responsibility. How many children have you raised, Prana? Right? Quite a few. Sorry? No, not biological, but I'm just saying you're helping making them Krishna conscious. Right? How many? Hundreds, probably, right? And has it been easy? They're not even your kids. Huh? But it's a huge effort. You've got to set a good example. You have to know the philosophy and the practice of Krishna consciousness. You have to demonstrate it. What to speak of, you've got to go to work. You've got to make money. A lot of effort. But if we do that in the proper consciousness with the goal of... And even then, we try to make the children Krishna conscious, and what do? See you later. I'm going to go my own way. Right? And we shouldn't be surprised by that. Prabhupada had children. They didn't all become pure devotees. Right? So they have their own mind and their own inclinations. So we can perform this, you know, which teaches us that we have to be detached from what we do, that we're not the cause of the results, right? So detachment has to be there. So it's a huge responsibility. Yeah. The whole idea of material creation is to revive the dormant God consciousness of the living entity. This is the purpose. The purpose of existence. But not everybody takes advantage of it. Or, you know, we get bewildered because we're engaged in the reviving Krishna consciousness, but we keep on getting bewildered by these material attachments. Especially this Praja Ananda. But we should understand this, it's actually Krishna's arrangement, and it's under the control ultimately of Krishna. So therefore we should surrender to that. Not that we should surrender to the Praja Ananda, you know, it's Krishna's, it's okay, I can do it. Right? No, but we do it according to religious principles. Right? In order to be purified. And we have to be purified because unless we're free from this, and this is a bodily designation, until we're free from these bodily designations, then we can't appreciate the higher levels of Krishna conscious self-realization. We need to get free from this bodily concept of life. That's the most important thing. And we do that by engaging our senses in the service of the master of the senses. I'll finish. I haven't covered all of the points here, but anyway, it's too late. But I'll read one verse. Sarvopadi viniyamuktam tatparat vena nirmanam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchate. This is a verse from the Narada Pancharatra, but it's quoted in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. At the beginning of, which is the Nectar of Devotion. Very important verse. Bhakti, or devotional service, means engaging all our senses in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of all the senses. Right? He's the master of, which is what's being presented in this chapter of the Bhagavatam. All these senses are all, they're controlled by different demigods, and we also control them by our desire, facilitated by the demigods. But ultimately, above this is Krishna, the master of the senses. And they're not actually our senses, they're actually his senses. But he's giving them to us, why we put the tilak on. This body, these senses, belong to Krishna. So I'm going to use them in his service. When the spirit soul renders service under the Supreme, there are two side effects, interestingly enough. One is freed from all material designations. So we come to the platform of realizing what? Not the body. Yeah. Brahma Bhuta Prashanatma. Na sochati na kanchati. So we come to this, the Brahma Bhuta, understanding that I'm spiritual, not material. Brahma Bhuta. And then in that stage, when we realize that we're Brahma Bhuta or spiritual, then na sochati na kanchati, we know hanker or lament. It's a very elevated platform. And one's senses are purified simply by being employed in a service of the Lord. So that's our business. If we very fortunate, we just give it up. This sex indulgence. But if not, then it needs to be engaged properly through the process of, you know, through the regulation, rules and regulations as given to us by the scriptures, ultimately as by Krishna's arrangement. Okay. Anybody have any quick questions or comments? Long questions or comments? No? All clear. Okay. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhakta Brinda ki jai.